Hello and welcome to another edition of the Gobeski Wallace Report. My name is Charlie Wallace.
I'm Adam Gobeski, and please welcome our three guests today. We have Kevin Vredevoog.
Hello.
Doug Gobeski.
Thank you for having me.
And Paul Wilcox, Esquire.
It is so great to be back.
I was really hoping that Charlie would forget and call us excellent guests.
I didn't get the opportunity, yeah.
Yeah, he went first this time, so. Yeah. But yes, we are talking about our 12th episode on our sci-fi shuffle. It's the 1989 movie Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure. But before we get to that, quick addendum to the podcast from two podcasts ago.
Oh, boy.
Paul, Tony's not here, but you can talk about it with me. I can't believe we forgot to mention the bit 2000 from the 2000s.
Yeah, that was really one of our most frequented bits. Maybe that's why we forgot it. We were just like, oh, that was just normal conversation.
A very heinous oversight.
Yeah, definitely.
You want to explain 2000 from the 2000s?
My understanding is that it stems from the previous installment of this playlist. I think it started from you were making it for Tony for trivia hosting.
I don't know if it was trivia hosting or if it was just me posting on his Facebook page.
Oh, right. That probably predated all that.
Yeah.
So it was just 90 from the 90s. Are they in any particular order or they're just
vibes based?
Yeah. Just
I don't even know if it's the top 90. It's just 90 choice cuts.
The first 90 songs you thought of that you liked from the 90s.
Yeah. But you only get one song per artist. So.
Oh, yeah. It's an important rule when we get to 2000 from the 2000s.
Yeah.
Because basically, if you name it,
it's on the list.
It's on there.
Unless
you can fight over the song.
That's right.
You can be like, I don't know if that's the Hillary Duff song that should be on the 2000.
But yeah, we talked a lot about 2000 from the 2000s.
Naming all the worst bands from the 2000s and being like, they gotta be on there.
That's right. I'm sorry that you don't like The Calling, but they make the cut.
they're from the 2000s.
You can name 1999 other bands.
That's right.
Yep, that's the only way you can boot someone out of the 2000.
Simple plan, sorry. But anyway, I just wanted to make sure that didn't go by undocumented.
It really was one of the most important bits. It just, you know, it sometimes you get wrapped up in all the other more controversial ones, you know, and it's easy to overlook the real workhorses, you know.
Yeah, the real family-friendly bits.
Yeah, exactly. You get wrapped up in like, oh, Paul's a foot weirdo or something.
Well, yeah, Sci-Fi Shuffle, episode 12. Charlie, why'd you pick Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure for us to watch?
So this movie is an all-timer for me. And for the reason that...
Can we do corrections to a different podcast?
Oh, sure.
Because at one point we were doing Cinematic Respect and you told me your favorite movie of all time was Unforgiven. And I believe I expressed skepticism. And it now occurs to me that the reason why I expressed such intense skepticism, among other things, was that I knew your favorite movie was this. And that's why you had a poster of it in our dorm room.
I said an all-timer, meaning like it's up there. Like I don't have all like my favorite movies ranked. Maybe I should.
It's Bill and Ted.
Yeah. It's, I mean, and for the reason that a lot of movies are people's favorite movies, which is that I had it when I was a kid and I watched it over and over and over on Betamax.
Was this an off-air or was this a official Betamax recording?
I don't think it was official. I think this was a copy.
Tape.
I would have to ask my parents, yes. There was a few movies we had. We had like this. We had like The Secret of Nim. We had Last Unicorn.
Ooh.
Yeah. No, very interesting movies. And it was just like an argument every time about what to watch. But this is one that it wouldn't be hard to agree on.
We only have three beta movies, family.
And they're not making any more now, so.
What is the last Betamax release?
Oh, I don't know. probably are, yeah, it's still into the 90s, right? Like 90, 95?
Apparently it's Mission Impossible.
Really?
According to this Reddit thread.
Nice. That's too far off.
They continued producing blank Betamax tapes for recording until 2016, though.
That I believe.
Are they still making new VHS tapes?
I feel like that.
I can buy 4 on Amazon right now, so unless they just stockpiled decades ago.
Yeah, I thought I read at some point like the last company that was making them was no longer making them.
That's probably why there's only 19 in stock and that I should order soon.
But also it could be one of those things
this.
It could be one of those things like vinyl where it came back.
Yeah. Like someone was like, I've been sitting on this like vacant warehouse and I don't know what to do with this video cassette tape manufacturing equipment that has been languishing in my possession.
Nobody's gonna buy it. But I hear
the kids like tapes now.
Also, apparently the last VHS movie was A History of Violence in 2006.
Okay.
As like a major release, like not counting like the, I'm sure there's like boutique horror films that get VHS versions and stuff.
I bought a VHS last year that was new, so I don't know where they get those tapes.
But anyway, I believe we were talking about Betamax.
Right. I wanted to revisit it. It's one that I've revisited every, you know, few years, but this one was kind of an interesting revisit for me.
So how many times would you say, if you had to guess, have you seen this film?
Probably like 50, probably like 35 to 40 times, like within the course of a couple of years, and then like every like 5 years since.
Do you think it's up there in terms of movies you've watched most frequently or rewatched most frequently?
Oh,
or do you
think
there's a bunch that are above that?
No, especially not recently. Like, I don't tend to rewatch movies that much nowadays just because there's just so much to see. But yeah.
True, but also you have children.
So. Yeah. That too.
Celeste doesn't have a favorite movie she wants to watch over and over.
Yeah. Oh, that's true. That's a good point. I watch Elemental a lot. The Super Mario Brothers movie now.
Ooh.
Yeah.
The new one.
Yep. It's on Netflix. Sorry. So, yep.
Yeah, it was fine. It was aggressively fine.
The problem for me was that we watched the original Super Mario Brothers movie like a day or two before we watched the new one. And so the new one just sort of fell flat as a result.
Yeah, I think the new one definitely has the rough corners sanded off in a way that the original does not. The original being the live action 93 version, of course, not the 1990 roughly anime movie.
Yes.
Speaking of that movie, written by one of the co-writers of this film.
I know. I saw that.
Wait, what?
Like looking through the credits, in particular, Ed Solomon of the two writers is kind of got some interesting credits, including Super Mario Brothers movie.
And Men in Black.
Super Mario Brothers, from 1993, and Men in Black.
And the other writer, Chris Matheson, is the son of Richard Matheson, who's a well-known science fiction writer.
Oh, I didn't know that.
He wrote things like I Am Legend, the original story, not the movie.
So, yeah, Ed Solomon and Chris Matheson, if you look through their credits, have things you recognize. I mean, but besides, I think the couple things that we've mentioned, nothing you might recognize but not remember that well. And then, let's see, the director, Stephen Herrick, what else did he do? Mr. Holland's Opus.
Oh, I've seen that in the theaters when they took us to the Sun Theater. We went and saw Mr. Holland's Opus.
So some fine things. They're fine.
What about other people? Had other people seen this before? Before we get into the details of the movie.
I watched this once before, a few years back, back when I used to have streaming services. And I was like, Bill and Ted, that sounds good. So I watched this one and the sequel, but the third one had not come out yet. So, and then I guess again today.
I hadn't seen it before in its entirety. I'm pretty sure I saw from like the mall to the end on TV before, though.
So I know I watched it with Charlie all the way through at least once. I think I'd seen it once all the way through before that. And then, yeah, like Paul, you know, you catch bits of it here and there. I don't know if I ever watched a full run through more than those two times, though, in addition to just now.
I'm sure I've seen this before because I recognize the plot beats, but for the life of me, I can't remember when. It must have been 10, 20 years ago at this point.
There's not a lot of drama behind this. It was produced by Dino De Laurentiis and his production company, which...
Oh, wow. Is that why there's the King Kong poster in the background?
Probably, yeah.
And one of the, and I think Ted's bedroom.
Yeah.
No, I think it was Bill's bedroom.
Yeah.
Where I was like, that's a weird poster to have.
Yeah, there's some weird, weird room designs in this too, but
because Dino De Laurentiis produced the King Kong remake from the 70s. There, everyone's caught up now.
Produced a lot of stuff, but they hit some hard times around 88 when they were supposed to be finding a distributor, and I think Nelson Entertainment, it says, picked them up for about $1 million and then ended up making $40 million on it. So it was a pretty good deal. I think the movie cost about $10 million. So it was a pretty decent, like, it made its money for sure. Enough that they decided to make a sequel later.
And a bunch of TV shows
and a video, like a Nintendo game. I think it also had trouble with finding distribution because nobody was interested in the movie until they did a couple of test screenings that were pretty well received. And then they had some, you know, a little bit of bidding back and forth. But it was a modest hit. With the critics, it was moderately well received, I guess. Kind of mixed. Some people...
You're really selling this movie.
Well, yeah. No. It's one of these things I think people remember very positively, and hence we got our third movie fairly recently, I think during the pandemic. I'll let you guys like breathe sort of a sigh of relief and say that I know that this movie is overwhelmingly stupid. Right? You're not going to offend me.
The note I wrote to myself is, this movie is endearingly dumb.
Yes.
I enjoyed that it's a movie about historical figures that teaches you barely anything about said figures.
Right, the bare minimum.
They're all great at going with the flow.
I like how at one point he's like, wow, Billy the Kid, you're taking this in stride. Good for you. Yeah.
You're going to be our liaison. Yeah. Yeah.
I don't remember how these podcasts go. Do we need to say what the movie's about at all?
I guess so. Bill and Ted are two high school, I guess, slackers, for lack of a better word, who live in San Dimas and are going to fail their, I guess, senior year? They're going to fail a year of high school if they don't pass their history class with an A-plus grade in their final
report. They're going to flunk out of school.
That's right. The most, you know, horrendous thing or heinous thing that could possibly happen to anyone. In fact, Ted's going to have to go to military school if he fails this exam.
In Alaska.
He needs an A+. And when they're trying to their hardest, which is not very hard to study, a telephone booth comes out of the sky with George Carlin as Rufus from the future, saying that it's very important that they pass their history exam or the future of the world is at stake. And so they go back in the past to find some historical figures.
Why?
To bring back. Well, I guess we could get to that. But the reason is because their music aligns all the planets and unites all of Earth's people into harmony. Don't ask any further questions.
Save it for the sequels.
Yes, exactly.
The sequels that this movie does not feel like it ever thought it would get.
No, not at all. Not at all. And so that's what it is. It's a time travel adventure. For, I guess, would have been shot a couple years after Back to the Future, but it came out 4 years after Back to the Future, which is worth noting as we talk about it.
Yeah, one thing I sort of appreciated was how, this might sound strange when we're talking about Bill and Ted, but how, like, internally consistent the time travel logic was.
Yeah.
Like, I think the only thing I really questioned was where the trash can came from.
Oh.
When they, trapped as Bill's Ted's, I have to always consciously think which one's Bill and which one's Ted.
Oh, right. It doesn't, it to some extent doesn't matter.
Yeah. The police chief or police detective dad.
Yeah, it's Ted's dad.
That was, I think, the only time I was like, how did, what? Everything else, I was like, that makes perfect sense. And I guess if we're also talking about other things that we liked, I liked how They didn't just all speak English.
Oh, all of the historical figures?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Sigmund Freud did, but I guess I can believe that he might have known
1901. Yeah. He would have known some English, I think. So, Paul, what do you want to talk about?
Now all I can think about is how Freud had a corn dog.
Yeah! I also like how he holds it up in that scene, and then when they reject him, he, like, droops it. Oh, wow.
If you look at a couple of the bad reviews from that time, it was stuff like that that they did. Like, I can't believe that these historical figures were so comically drawn. Not comically drawn, but it's like they were very one note. And I'm like, I don't know. What do you want? And there's like seven or eight of them.
Making them out to be kind of doofuses was definitely a move, but I thought it paid off. My absolute favorite parts of the movie are just watching the historical figures act like lunatics in various time periods.
Yeah, like Joan of Arc just being like, I think I can lead this around.
My absolute favorite in the background, I think right after they go to whatever castle age they were in, Billy the Kid and Socrates playing football, and it's just like not even addressed, but just really dumb little things like that absolutely make this movie for me.
They were really fast friends.
Yeah.
Stuff that when I first saw this movie, I didn't even register, like, why would Abraham Lincoln insist on keeping his hat at that moment? Like, maybe just give up your hat. I'm sure you got a lot of other hats. You're not just going to steal it and run away. You're not so far from the past. I know you're not so far from the past, though, that you don't think that something's going to happen. I don't know.
But it's his hat.
I mean, no, the absolute absurdity of the President of the United States pushing over this photographer and just sprinting away with his hat is it's wonderful.
I assume that's in one of the Lincoln biographies. I also wondered why in the Oval Office there was a map of Florida, but on its side.
I did not see staring at that,
trying to figure out why the map of Florida was rotated 90 degrees.
That seems like somebody having a little bit of fun. It's sometimes kind of hard to tell, like, what's in the script and what's not. I think a lot of this stuff was just, like, people messing around on the day of.
I'm willing to believe fully scripted.
Fully scripted, like even the corn dog.
Fully scripted, Stephen Herrick being like, you will not deviate from these lines at all. This is your Bible. Sorry, you were saying.
Oh, so I guess let's just talk about Alex Winter and Keanu Reeves. What did people think about Bill and Ted? What do you think about them as characters? Did you have any preconceived notions about what this was?
Honestly, I think the thing that struck me is they're not as dumb as the general cultural idea of them is, I feel like.
Right.
I don't know. There was more to them than I thought.
Yeah, they're both very dumb, but also surprisingly smart in certain situations.
Yeah, like, they outsmarted me when it came to doing things in the future, like the keys and that sort of thing. I was like, no, that's dumb, because then it'll be after... Oh, wait. Okay, you go get the keys. You just got a lot of follow-up to do, but okay, yeah. Like,
except, no, like, that's... we're getting to, I think, my favorite joke in the film, which is that, no, Paul, there is no follow-up. They don't have to do the follow-up because it already happened.
All they have to do is imagine it.
Yes.
intend it. That and their vocabulary is a little wider than I expected. Not always like perfectly applied, but not incorrectly applied.
I didn't realize that either, seeing it at first. I thought they were just making up a lot of the words, or like that people actually talked like that ever.
And it's like, it really is a speaking style, you know? Like, it's
it was only them. It was not other teenagers at that time. But yeah, they're dumb in a very specific way about specific things, but then not about other things.
Yeah, they're just dumb about things that interest them. Just fair, I think. They're not interested in history until they start experiencing it.
I also didn't realize until I started watching this when I was older that the thing that's very hilarious about their report is how good it is. Like, I would have to give them an A+. It's the teacher did. I just assumed that the teacher, like, when I was younger, they're like, oh, the teacher just gave them a good grade to get them out of there. But then I watched it, like, when I was older, and I was like, if a couple of kids came with this sort of presentation, I'd be like, wow, that sets the standard for everything I see from here on out.
You better have a time traveling phone booth that shows up on the auditorium stage so they can set everything up ahead of time.
Because there were a couple times in this movie that I thought, like, this is so close to being a timeless movie. Like, there was a little bit of 80s sprinkled in there when they went to the mall. The general treatment of the female characters was a little sketchy. But the thing that really stood out was, like, oh, he just shot a gun in front of a group of students. Right. And nope, everyone was pretty okay with that.
They cheered. They're like, that's really cool.
Like, nobody believes that these are actual historical figures, though. Only Bill and Ted know that. Everyone else just has to assume that they hired a bunch of actors and, like, that they're blanks in the gun and that they just got people to do all the lights for them.
I suppose.
I guess. I don't
know. Except for the one person sitting underneath the light who got all these shards of glass on them. Oh. It's like, I think that's a real gun.
Shut up.
Show.
I know.
Or, oh, they planted a small explosive in the light.
But also not that they just powered their way through it by hiring people, but they actually understood the assignment and did it better than anyone else. Like, they have the other presentations before that, and you see that, like, one's okay, another one's horrible.
Yeah, but also, what school is this where there's just a school assembly of people's history class assignments
on like a Saturday?
Yeah. What's going on here? An all-day assembly in the auditorium. This movie doesn't make sense.
I like to think it's voluntary, like, attendance from, like, the other students, but they just are really that into it. They're like, this is, it's a big event.
Probably got like extra credit or something to attend, you know?
Yeah.
Kevin, what do you want to talk about?
What do I want to talk about?
I think we could, I mean, so we kind of get stuck in the trap here of just talking about, like, little parts that we like. And I think yeah. It's because there is, especially watching it this time, like, there's not a lot to this movie.
Kevin, your, like, voice sounds different.
Oh, sorry. I'm just giving him an out for, like, why.
Yeah, because I mean, everything that popped to mind was like, oh, I liked this joke, or oh, I thought this was dumb. But yeah, it's not like there's some deeper meaning somewhere in this movie that we can really, like, dig into in depth. Part that I thought was dumb, he fell out of his armor. That doesn't make a lot of sense. which I'm sure was the joke, but it was just like, it was so dumb that it lowered the bar or whatever. One thing I will say, I haven't seen a lot of Keanu Reeves movies, but I think this is some of the best acting I have seen him do, just because he's playing a complete dumbass. It's just like, he goes for it, he acts ridiculous, and it's absolutely perfect for the role. Whereas everything else I've seen him in, he's just kind of come off as a little wooden. I mean, I'm not saying he's a horrible actor or anything, but this is far removed the performance I have enjoyed of his the most.
Have you seen any other the other Bill and Ted's?
I have not seen the other Bill and Ted's. I may have seen like half of Bogus Journey. I remember seeing the scene with Death, but no, I think
I just not to talk too much about Face the Music, the most recent one, but there is something about seeing Keanu Reeves looking like John Wick but acting like Bill Preston. That's kind of amazing.
You mean Ted Theodore Logan?
Son of a
I mean, they act like each other though, so it's not false.
I even paused and said to myself, yeah, he's Bill, okay.
Oh, no! One thing that I enjoyed was that the plot is simultaneously the lowest stakes imaginable and the highest stakes imaginable.
Yeah, you have to pass a history report or else all of the future is doomed.
I really like that setup because it gives you permission to, like, forgive everything else. You're like, all right, this movie's dumb. Like, it's stupid, and I shouldn't take anything seriously after this. Like, if that's really what's going on,
You know, I didn't really think about this until we just started talking about it now, but I kind of love that the plot of this movie is like any, it's at least very similar to any like high school 80s movie, you know, where gonna ski to save the ski lodge from corporations or whatever, or you know, we gotta, I mean, it at its core, it's, yeah, we gotta
fight the Russians from invading America,
sure. we gotta pass this test, so or do this performance, or you know, so we don't get sent to military school. And then on top of that, they just slap the time travel element. Like it's almost like kind of a send up of the more like stereotypical 80s high school movies. But I don't know, you know, I don't know if that was intentional or they just came up with a crazy idea and went with it.
Yeah, Charlie, do you know anything about where this idea came from?
I know that the writers had, I think, workshopped two characters. Maybe they'd done some stand up or some shows like as similar characters, and they'd worked on a script, and like there's a lot of stuff that got cut either from the final movie or just before the final script, including like it's instead of a telephone booth it was gonna be a van. And
I did briefly read that at one point they were kidnapping, instead of Napoleon they were kidnapping Hitler.
Right, yeah.
Would have been a very different movie. Also, I heard that they changed from a van because it was too much like Back to the Future.
That makes sense, yeah.
Well, so they instead went with something that looked like Doctor Who.
Yeah, okay.
Yep. And then they said, like, no, we actually didn't know what Doctor Who was at all when we wrote this.
Which is fair for an American in 87 or whatever.
Right.
Yeah, maybe they just thought it was a fun gag to cram tons of people into a phone booth.
Yeah, that's true, yeah.
It was the exact same size on the inside as it looked from the outside.
Twist.
It was supposed to be a version of this. It was like 2.5 hours long, which they smartly cut down to slightly less than 90 minutes, I think.
I think it was just about exactly 90, yeah.
Yeah. The movie does not outstay its welcome, which is criteria number one for a good movie for Charlie.
I think I was expecting more complications than we got. Like, most of the complications were just like, oh, we lost track of them somewhere in the mall. Not like, oh, we need to go back into time and do something else with, like, the princesses or something like that, you know? Yeah, like you said, very low stakes.
And also, like, I love that even though they've been told that, like, the future depends on them doing this successfully, they immediately forget about that. Or don't really care. They're still just concentrating on not going to military school, not failing the class. That's what's important to them.
Yeah, priorities.
Doesn't even dawn on them like the enormity of what they're trying to do. If you all had met yourself telling yourself to trust somebody who came out of the sky in a telephone booth, and that was the situation, would you trust yourself? Like in that situation, I was thinking about this time, like, I don't know, that's pretty convincing.
Yeah, especially with the...
And they were thinking the same number.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I guess I never thought about that.
Right.
I didn't put myself in the movie.
I constantly do that.
I'm a real Mary Sue. Yeah, I don't know. I guess. It seemed like a pretty straightforward way to get them to trust the man from the sky.
Yeah, it depends on what other things that you've seen so far. Like, because, I mean, you'd think that the standard movie move would be to distrust your other selves, right? But it's an important part of the characters that they do.
It's also important to get the movie going.
Yeah. Right. It's a real yes and movie.
Right.
Although, okay, we did talk about the time travel being consistent, but the having the time in San Dimas continuing to roll on as they're traveling, it's and like winding the watch, like that's funny, but I still don't understand.
Well, I think it just means that time passes for them. It needs to pass the same amount of time in their timeline or else the circuits will break.
Right. It's got to be something they
clogged.
It's got to be something that they didn't explain in order for that to make any sense. Because it's like, yeah, you just come back sometime after you left, like the second after you left. Or maybe the dials don't work that way. Well, you can only go one number up or down, which is like an extra day. I don't know. Well,
You should write to the scriptwriters and demand answers.
I will.
You should corner them at a Comic-Con.
So who is your favorite historical character?
Probably Socrates. He just seemed like a big old goofball. Just happy to be there.
Socrates is good. I do like Joan of Arc, but I think that might just be because I thought Jane Whedon was cute.
Yeah.
Jane Whedon, of course, best known for at one point dating Russell Mail of Sparks.
Oh, that? That's what she's most known for, eh?
Yeah, I mean, probably she did other stuff, like maybe being an incredibly influential girl group, but eh.
I will say that when they introduce her into the movie, I like the cinematography of, you know, the hand reaching out. Like, I thought it was very well done for a dumb movie about slackers.
Right, yeah.
I do like Billy the Kid, though. Like, I like how non-threatening he is.
Like, him being the first guy, too, you think, oh, man, this is going to be fraught with danger. You know, because I'm seeing, like, you know, I haven't seen, like, the first part of the movie. So I'm like, how do they get to, like, the crazy mall scene from this, you know, intimidating saloon scene? But now I see how they did that. He's just a chill dude.
Just a chill dude born in unchill times. Yeah. Yeah, my favorite by far is Napoleon. I just, that guy, I mean, like, I don't know if he actually knows any French, like, his accent's fine, but every single thing that he says is, like, basic French that you can figure out from context anyway, but, like.
Oh, I didn't realize you were fluent in French, Charlie.
Well, no, it's, like, idiot and stuff like that. But anyway, like, just him just being a complete asshole. It's everywhere he goes.
What, like the water park?
Yeah. Well, actually, that's kind of funny, too, because there's a couple of parts of the water park where he's having fun and being nice to the other kids.
Yeah, like he gets into charming. It. He's, yeah.
Hey, Charlie.
Yeah.
Remember when we went to mini golf and we played it where it lies? Here in Arizona.
You're lucky there wasn't anyone behind us.
Well, yeah. But do you remember that?
I do.
That is the location where they filmed the water slide.
Oh, yeah. I didn't know that. Like, I know that a lot of this was done in the Phoenix area. Like, quite a bit of the filming was.
Brianne would like you to know that she was going to work at that water park, but then something, I don't know. There was some reason she didn't. She got a job somewhere else.
No, nice.
And apparently the Circle K is down the road from us, although I guess it's closed since then. I read an article, but which I didn't know, and I was surprised you didn't make us go on a pilgrimage when you were here. Maybe, maybe you did it on your own.
Yeah. No, I didn't know. I looked at it this time. There is one article I found where they just, there isn't much interesting digging that they've done, but they do have a lot of pictures of the filming and the different places and the Phoenix area where they did a lot of the shooting.
Yeah, but there's like those one shot at the top of the water slide where you can see the road in the background. And I'm like, oh, that's the 60. I was on that today. I drove past that today. I actually got off at that exit. And then I went to Culver's and I ordered a grilled chicken sandwich with no tomato. The nice thing about Culver's is when you ask for no tomato, they actually subtract the cost of the tomato from the sandwich. It's slightly cheaper.
Wait, really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Wow, they really opened Pandora's box there. Like, what else could I? That. Yeah, what other models could
I could subtract
as a plain
everything.
Cheeseburger eater?
Could I subtract everything and get a receipt for $0.00?
Look at all that money I saved and calories.
One of the highlights. As a kid / teenager watching this film, we always loved when Napoleon went over the foul line at bowling and slid and just started shouting "Merde" over and over and over. Like, do we just like it because he was swearing and we were kids? And I watched it now. I'm like, no, that's just really funny.
Napoleon adding 100 points to his score did crack me up. It was just, he knew he wasn't getting away with it. He did it anyway.
Although I feel like there's a whole lot more about Deacon that I want to know.
Right.
There's like a whole unexplored subplot going on there. Like, how does Deacon feel about Ted going to military school?
We don't know much about Deacon except he has a couple of friends that he's hanging out with and thinks Napoleon's kind of a square and dumps him. I tried. That's enough. You're on your own. And he's like a full-grown man. Take care of this full-grown man for us.
Yeah. We put him in your bed. We know you have plans tonight. But, like, can you just bring him along to every kid hangout place?
He does not speak English.
And the writers are the two waiters at the ice cream shop.
Oh,
really?
Yeah.
That was a great scene. I really found myself wishing that there was a
place. You had a giant bowl of ice cream.
Yeah. And when I finished it, someone would come out and like call me a piggy.
Oh, as long as if we're just naming favorite parts, I mean,
there's not anything else to talk
about. Yeah, yeah, no, I'm jumping in then.
There's no deeper like themes that need to be explored.
I mean, there's music and special effects. We haven't covered either one of those.
Sure, we can talk about that after Kevin's favorite moment.
Sure. When they arrived back in the, I guess what is in the movie's terms, the present, the ever-continuing ticking of time in wherever they are in California. When they're in front of Bill's stepmom and they're trying to pass all of the people they brought out as like normal people. So they just like, this is Bob Genghis Khan and Maxine of Arc. And the perfect end to that where he just gives up and very disappointedly says, and that's Abraham Lincoln. Just that entire scene. Perfect. That is all I needed from this movie.
There was even a Dennis in there. Which one was Dennis?
Dennis Freud.
Yeah.
Yeah, the cleaning montage is one of the parts of the movie I always forget about. Not my favorite part, but not my least favorite part either. It's fun.
I also like how it's so random. Like, he has to go give a report at school, but first, please do your chores.
Stepmom is telling him to do his chores.
Have a large number.
And it's like, or what? Just go get the report done. Deal with the fallout afterward. I don't know. It wasn't Bill who was in trouble. It's not Bill that had to go to military school. Yeah, definitely did not get the Oedipal complex joke or all of that stuff when I was younger.
Oh my gosh. I laughed out loud this time around because I'd forgotten about that. I love that moment so much where he like psychoanalyzes Ted, but it's really his father. And then he's just like, how about you, Bill? And Bill just says, nah, I just got a minor Oedipal complex. Which is another just encapsulation of they're dumb, but also there are things in which they're not dumb.
But yeah, also that whole plot about Missy and his dad is like, I guess just not really necessary. I guess to show that like maybe he's not happy with his home life. But other than that, Ted, it's just like, yeah, just sort of like extra funny stuff that they can add in.
Remember when I asked her to the prom? Shut up, Ted.
I think this is the first time too I realized that she brought in sandwiches for them, like grilled cheese sandwiches, and they were just so burnt. This Bill is looking disgustedly at it. He's like, I can't even.
I was trying to figure out how old is she supposed to be, like how much older?
4 years-ish, because they said at one point that she was a senior when they were freshmen. So I guess 3 or 4 years.
Gotcha. Okay. And then one other thing about this movie that I liked, rewatching it, I remembered I had a big crush at one point on Diane Franklin, who's the Princess Joanna here, because she's also in Better Off Dead as the French exchange student. So,
oh, okay.
Have you seen Better Off Dead?
Not recently. Probably a couple decades ago.
I recommend it.
That's a skiing movie, right?
Technically, yes. Yeah, skiing does happen in that movie. That's not really a we have to save the school.
Right.
That was one that I managed to catch the whole thing on TV back in my cable days.
Gotcha. $2. Doug, music and special effects. Let's talk.
Oh, I'm not one to talk about music. You're the musician guy. You and Charlie both. Here.
We're the only musicians here.
Yep.
Go to hell, Paul.
Oh, yeah.
Paul, did you like all that keyboard music? coming out of the keyboards?
Yeah, Beethoven was really rocking out there.
Yeah, that's the scene when I think of Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure. That is first thing that comes to my mind. It was something else.
He rocked so hard that the guy called security to have him arrested.
Right, but some of the arrests make sense and some just do not.
Yeah, it was really like, man, this is a real police state here.
You know what? I
guess
if you're not gonna buy it, get out.
It could certainly be that they were like, all right, there are like three people who are dressed up in really strange costumes that we arrested. Just find anyone else in a costume.
Yeah.
They're all together. All
these weirdos have to be together.
No, because I think the sales guy actually went and got security.
I think you're right. I think in that case, it was...
And sent him straight to jail. I like that, too. Not even mall security jail. Actual jail.
But for the special effects, I find the 80s special effects quite charming. Where there's
something about the very smooth look.
How do you describe it? Where it's like animated lights and flashing stuff moving around the screen. And then like it was interesting to see that and what it seemed to be actual computer generated animation for the time circuits as well, which I thought worked well because they animated the background as well.
Yeah.
It really helped that very smooth CGI look was really, it seemed a lot less dated because it was a complete alternate universe and they like picked a style, you know, that it was going to look. There was minimal interaction with the CGI, which helped too.
Yeah.
It was really effective.
Anyway, I'm not really qualified to talk on the music because I'm not really an 80s music guy. Like I don't really, I just never listened to stuff like Van Halen, you know?
I was looking on the credits. I don't think there's any Van Halen. I think it's like, what I recognize, there's like Warrant.
There's a lot of bands I did not recognize. Although I did see the name Dweezil Zappa go by.
Hey. Oh, okay, yeah.
Who apparently his legal name is not Dweezil Zappa entirely because he used to put it on the birth form. Apparently it was just straight up, I'm not writing that down as his name.
Really?
Yeah.
Are the sequels worth watching, folks who have seen them?
So I've only seen Bogus Journey, but I would say yes, primarily because it's aggressively insane. Like if I were to describe it to you, maybe you would believe me having just watched this one, but still, you'd probably fantastic. Be skeptical.
Because you run into the problem of, okay, we've done this. Now we have to up the ante in the second movie. How do you up the ante from saving the entire future of humanity?
And the most recent one, was that worthwhile? Like I said, I think I'd seen at least a little bit of Bogus Journey, but nothing of the more recent release.
I watched it on a plane and it was fine.
Yeah, I watched it. I think we rented it the day it came out, and it was, I barely remember any of it, but yeah, it was fine.
Ringing endorsements.
Wait, so when I click on Power Tool on Wikipedia, who did the Two Heads Are Better Than One song, it redirects me to Nelson, who I actually have heard of.
Oh.
Apparently they hadn't quite been signed at that point, so... the A&R executive recommended they use a different name just in case. That's the song they wrote with Dweezil Zappa.
I mean, that's definitely solid soundtrack in it, but I mean, they're not breaking the bank either with it.
Yeah. It really feels like we don't have a lot of money kind of soundtrack.
They reportedly wanted to use Eddie Van Halen instead of George Carlin, but obviously that would have been too much money or like too much effort or didn't have the clout to be able to do it. I mean, like I said, they didn't even get Van Halen music in the soundtrack. But yeah, George Carlin, he's in this movie. He's great.
A lot less than my memory was. In my memory, he was in it a lot more than two scenes.
Because that first scene, at various times I've thought about it where it's, you know, in the future and he's explaining what he needs to do and meeting with, you know, the future leaders before he goes back in time. And every time I'm like, is this something they added later because they needed people like to explain to people what was going to happen? But like the stuff he says is pretty hilarious, like about bowling scores and golf scores. Those are the things that people are concerned about. Because then I think, like, wouldn't it be hilarious if they got to the end of the movie before you knew what his deal was, that he was trying to save, like, the future?
I mean, I guess, but I also appreciate just front-loading that so I don't have to worry about it.
Exactly, yeah.
Did Bill and Ted not find that fact out until a little bit later, like when Rufus was talking to them?
Yeah, I don't think they find right out after, until...
Yeah, it almost does feel...
future CD or whatever.
Yeah, it almost does feel like we weren't originally maybe intended to understand the full stakes at the very beginning. I think it works perfectly well that they had all of that exposition there, but I'd be interested in seeing the version of this movie where it just starts out with Bill and Ted being Bill and Ted, and then you see nothing of the future until suddenly Rufus pops up out of nowhere.
Strange things are afoot at the Circle K. That would be a very tonally different movie, I feel.
Yeah.
I think there'd be a lot more questions. Yeah, I think you just distract the audience at that point. Just their whole time going, why is this happening?
What is happening?
Yeah. Yeah. Like, if there's anything this movie is about, it's clean and efficient storytelling. Like, you know, you mentioned, I think Charlie mentioned earlier the question of, you know, would you trust yourself, you know, telling yourself to do stuff, you know, get in this box with this strange man, the rejecting the call trope. It's like, no, just take the call, man. Just take the call and be the hero. Come on. Let's get this thing moving. And they do.
It goes back to what Adam said, too. It's like they're stupid when they need to be stupid and they're smart when they need to be smart. It seems to be the only rhyme or reason. It's like, what does the script need them to be right now? Okay.
Just like real teenagers.
Right. But it sets itself up as so like aggressively dumb that as long as you're on board with it at the beginning, you can just ride it through to the end.
I mean, I do think if you didn't have the chemistry of Alex Winter and Keanu Reeves, that this movie would be a lot worse off.
No, definitely.
Like they really carry the movie because they're so likable.
Yeah, it's like they bring us in with them, you know?
Yeah.
So even in the scenes where they're not there, we accept reality as they do. You know?
Yeah, that's true. If you watch them too, they're doing a lot of work in each scene. A lot of like back and forth looks, particularly Keanu, is pretty hilarious as Ted. Like especially when he's uncomfortable, he'll like always look to Bill, like with a sort of like deer in a headlights look. I wish somebody would tell me what to do right now.
Anything else people want to talk about? Or should we start winding down?
One moment that I really liked, when they're talking to Deacon through the fence, and then they pull out the shot, and like the end of the fence is like a few feet down. Like, that one really got me. Like, it just felt slightly different than some of the jokes that had been, you know? Like, I was like, is this Airplane for a second?
All right, Charlie. So having rewatched it for the podcast, do you think Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure still holds up?
I do. It's you have to be on board from the beginning and understand that this is a dumb movie. It's not going to be about a lot. And it's just kind of a joke delivery system from start to finish. With a lot of the movies I like, I'm like, oh, there's a lot to it. Like there's, you know, these overarching themes or the movie's trying to say something. And like, do I really need a movie like that? I'm like, no, I either need it to be one way or the other. Like this movie just admits immediately that it's not going to be about anything. And I'm fine with that. What I don't like is where it tries to go for something and then fails or like half-asses it. So
perfect movie.
It's up there. It's like one of my favorites. I can watch it again and again.
I mean, yeah, it's certainly got charm to it. It, even though it is very dumb at times, it's not like annoyingly dumb to me, at least. Like I can sit back and enjoy it even when it's being ridiculous. Like, and then that makes the clever moments like stick out a little bit more. Like the tape recorder bit that distracts Ted's dad is simultaneously clever and also really stupid. Like when the tape runs out as he gets there. Of just like, oh, well, he distracted him long enough or something. What else should we say? And then they start doing like a Wild Stallions thing. Yeah, so it's a fun movie. I wouldn't call it one of the pinnacles of cinema, but for what it sets out to do, I think it does a great job.
It definitely deserves its place as a classic. And I'm really happy that I, you know, finally had a good reason to take the time and watch it end to end. I'm going to have to watch the sequels now as well, now that I kind of really know what I'm in for. Yeah, big recommend.
Honestly, I just don't have a lot to say about the movie. I mean, it was dumb. It was good. And I think that's what it was trying to be, dumb and good. And they nailed it. As far as 80s movies go, you know, I've never been a huge fan of even like The Breakfast Club. There's just something about 80s movies that don't always click with me. But I thought this, you know, stood the test of time pretty solidly. I would put this a heck of a lot closer to, let's say, Pee-wee's Big Adventure than I would, you know, most 80s movies that just never really clicked with me. So, yeah, no, I thoroughly enjoyed it. I'm probably going to watch the sequels just to complete the trilogy in the not too distant future. And yeah, thanks for picking this, Charlie.
Pee-wee's Big Adventure, another movie that we had on Betamax and watched over and over.
As long as it ended in the word adventure.
That's true.
This is a movie about the power of friendship to change the world and about having fun. And I enjoyed it. It is definitely a movie that is fun for the audience.
I may encapsulate it perfectly, Doug.
All right. Well, thanks for joining us on the 12th episode of the Sci-Fi Shuffle. Now we need to shuffle the...
Sci-Fi?
Need to shuffle that sci-fi, but we also need to shuffle the picker.
Oh, yeah. Who's in the running for this one?
Our choices are Doug, Adam, Paul, and Kevin. Can everyone see my screen that I'm sharing?
Sure can.
Yeah.
Wheelofnames.com. All right. Everybody ready? Doug, you are choosing the next sci-fi shuffle movie. What will we be watching next time?
Shoot. I don't know that I had one exactly planned. I have it narrowed down to two. They are both.
I mean, animated. We can do the Kevin route.
Yeah, we could do that. Ask us questions. Yes. We're gonna do that. I think we're gonna do that.
That's kind of fun.
So they're both animated. They're both taking place in the post-apocalypse. And I guess I should ask Charlie and Kevin, would you like to watch a movie that is, I assume, higher rated or lower rated of the pair?
I'd lean higher rated, Charlie, if you have feelings.
Sure. Yep.
All right. We are going to watch Nausicaa of the Valley.
I thought maybe that's what you were talking about. I don't know why I thought, for whatever reason, that's what you're going to pick. But yeah.
All right, a movie I don't have to buy because I already have it.
Oh, yeah.
And I haven't seen it yet, so I
really?
It's good.
Yeah, it's a big oversight, so I'm looking forward to it.
There is one thing in particular that I really, really, really like about it, and I won't share that with you until after you've seen it, just because it's a spoiler.
Dub's got Patrick Stewart.
Perfect.
No, Dobbs, get out of here.
Oh, yeah, good question. Are we watching the sub or the dub?
I'm watching subs because I'm not a monster like Charlie. But
because I think Max finally has the subs available.
It's been so long since I looked into this, but I think the dubs do change up a little bit of story. Oh. But I could be misremembering entirely and mixing this up with what was the version that originally came to America, like Warriors of the Wind or something, where they completely butchered the movie and released it in that format?
Yes.
Yeah, that could be a whole separate thing then.
We're not watching that version in any case.
Right, yeah. I think a lot of the movies they redubbed later. I don't think it was like a super like old dub of it. Anyway, who cares? I'll watch the sub this time anyway, all right?
Yeah, I haven't seen the sub before, so I guess I'll watch the sub.
Hmm.
This Reddit thread says that the Disney dub is reasonably accurate.
Okay.
One user says it's miles better and far more accurate than Warriors of the Wind ever was. one so person Kevin suggests watching it with the English dub and the English subtitles for the original language version to compare and contrast.
The first time you watch it, yes.
So, Charlie and Kevin, since you were guessing that that's what it was, can you guess what the other movie would have been? No help from Paul or Adam.
Is it Fern Gully? Was Fern Gully post-apocalyptic?
Yeah, it's not sci-fi.
Wait, would Secret of Nim be sci-fi?
Oh, it would have to be, right?
Yes.
It's fiction and they're doing science.
Yeah, I think that's probably...
Pull out the Betamax.
All right, well, Nausicaa next time. How exciting.
Wait. What was the other movie? I need some resolution on this now.
Nine
and not.
Oh, okay.
So we have that to look forward to. But in the meantime, thanks for discussing Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure with us. I'm Adam Gobeski.
And I'm Charlie Wallace. A special thanks to our, I'm going to do it, three excellent guests. We've got Paul Wilcox.
It was a most excellent time.
Kevin Vredevoog.
Hey, it's been a pleasure.
And Doug Gobeski.
Party on, dudes.
Be excellent to each other.
So, if you enjoyed that episode of the Gobeski Wallace Report, it doesn't have to stop there.
Are you sure?
I'm pretty sure.
Are we gonna reveal the secrets?
I'm ready if you are.
I mean, I guess they can start by following us on Facebook.
Or Twitter. Or just go to the old-fashioned internet to GobeskiWallaceReport.com.
Search AOL keyword Gobeski Wallace Report.
I think you can find us actually in the Yahoo directories if you click on entertainment, audio, miscellaneous. Ooh.
You know what I will say? I haven't seen a boatload of Keanu Reeves movies. Okay, quick timeout. Is it Keanu Reeve or Keanu Reeves? Because I don't want to make this mistake twice in a row.
It is Keanu Reeves.
Keanu Reeves. Okay.
There you go.
So and one thing I will say. Yeah. I, okay, collecting myself.